You? Yes. We are, our technical abilities are rather limited to the pre-2000s, I feel. So we have our, if you picked up in the back, I'm sorry, childcare is also in room one. So we have that every meeting, and we also have some refreshments in the back. And if you picked up, signed in on, if you were on a roster and were able to sign in, and you went ahead and picked up all of your items, you will have received a blue card for voting. And so how, just by a show of hands, how many people are new tonight? How many people, is this your first time at the DAC meeting? Excellent!
There you are.
Welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for being here, especially on a, as Rodolfo said, a dark and stormy night. It is definitely dark and stormy out there. All right, so your pink sheets that you picked up in the back, those are your agendas for this evening. Our meetings follow Robert's Rules of Order, so we start with a welcome and a call to order. And we will begin with the approval of our agenda. So we just need to have a motion from the general body, and you can do that by raising your card. All right, we have a motion to approve the agenda from Roosevelt. And I need a second, let me just see, from Taft. Fantastic. All those in favor of approving our agenda for the night, just go ahead and raise your blue card up high. We do have someone counting, so I apologize if at the end of the day you have tired arms from typing or teaching or whatever. So hold them up just another moment more. Excellent, thank you. And do we have any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, our agenda is approved for the night. Fantastic, thank you. And according to the Green Act, we have moved our public comment to the front of our meeting, so I hope that in turn you're also doing this at your SSC meetings, at your school sites. Public comment is meant to be at the beginning of the meeting, so we can allow people to speak on non-agenda items. So I'll go ahead and allow 5 minutes or less if there is no public comment, but I'd ask that you come to the podium. All right. A little public comment. Oh. Don't forget your name and your school site.
I know my name. Valentina Hernandez, Hoover High School, PTSA president and DLAC vice chairperson, and future DAC president.
No campaigning, please.
The buses. Thank you for the bus today. Nobody came from Crawford, though.
Very bad.
I was going to say something. I forgot. Something. You made me forget, see? What was it? Well, one thing is grad night. We need school buses from the district to take us because charter buses are exploiting grad night customers. They want $14,000 for one day to take 220 people. That is ridiculous.
I don't know if that's necessary.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. I just remember.
Go ahead.
Originally, when I said public comment at the beginning, I wasn't necessarily referring to the DAC. I was referring to the school board. The school board has not done the right thing by putting public comment at the end of the meeting. So do they really want to hear parent, student, and community voice? No. And that's why we have to be strong here and give that as an advice to them, that they need to stop that and put it at the beginning of the meeting, because there's people with children, families that need to get home and everything, make food and send the kids to bed. And they can't, even if they wanted to, because they have it all the way till the end. Thank you.
Thank you for that. All right. We have up next some introductions. Yeah, it's a little loud there, I know. Introductions of our district staff that are with us tonight. Now, as SSC members and DAC representatives, we have an entire office that supports your site at the district level. And that is our Financial Planning, Monitoring, and Accountability Office. And that director is, the director of that is Thomas Liberto. And as the fun acronym, or a little shorter way of saying it, we call it the FPMA office. And there's a list of acronyms on our DAC website under resources. It is quite long, but I do recommend it. I keep it in my bag with me or in my DAC binder. Next, I have Miss Mary Johnson, who represents, I'm not going to get it right, Area 5. We have some additional resource teachers to support our school site councils and principals this year, which is something that was as a result of the efforts made by our DAC and some of the comments made to the board by our DAC executive team. In addition to Mary Johnson, we also have Mr. Fred, and I am having a hard time with everybody's Hilders. Hilders, thank you. I have a hard time with your last name, and I'm not sure why. And he is in charge of our, he's overseeing our high school. So Fred, can you raise your hand so everyone can see you? So if you are at a school site council at the high school level, he is your resource teacher and your resource. We also have Miss Erin Easter. Erin Easter. Area 3. So if you are sitting at Area 3 table, which would be this table right in front of me, if you're in Area 3, Erin, if you could raise your hand and wave hi just real quick. She is your resource teacher. And we have Dario Gutierrez, who's hiding back there. He is our resource teacher for Area 1. So that would be this table sitting here. And we have Adriana. I apologize. I'm having a horrible day with names today. I met literally 15 new people today, and so I've got names swimming through my mind. Okay, and she represents Area 4. So Area 4, she'll wave over there to her. Excellent. And who am I missing? Rachel. Oh, there she is. She's in the back. Rachel is with Area 2, and so she's sitting here with her table. So I am so grateful and thankful for the presence of these resource teachers, because they are here to help you, to answer questions. If there's something that you hear here that you're not hearing reflected back at your school site, then you can say, hey, you know what? I think we need to call Mary, or we need to call Fred, or hey, let's suggest this to our either SSC chair or to the principal. All right, we have minutes on our blue sheet. And so next up on the list is to approve our minutes from last meeting, and we can do that again with a show of a card. I have a motion to approve from Riley. Do I have a second from Madison back there? Excellent, thank you. All right, do we have any discussion or any comments to be made from that? All right, then all those in favor of approving our minutes from last month's meeting, please raise your card high. And again, we do have some people counting, so hold it up high for just another moment. Thank you. And while they're counting, I don't know if you'll notice, but there are some cards that have yellow stripes. It only means that that site does not receive Title I funds. But we have a membership that includes every single school that has a school site council. So DAC welcomes all schools, so we don't just talk about Title I. Are we good? Excellent. Thank you. Any opposed? I know that was a while. I was getting tired. Any abstentions? All right. Oh, one abstention from Zamorano. Oh, two. All right. So last month, If you were here last month, or I know that we have recommended to some school site councils that you rotate your membership. Every school site council member added to a roster as a DAC alternate is also a DAC member who has a vote. So if you weren't here last month, but one of your fellow SSC members were, they would have brought this Title I parent involvement policy back, and it's not even called Title I parent involvement policy any longer. It is called the district guidelines. It's even worse. Title I Parent A LEA level parent and family engagement policy. Now there's some more acronyms. LEA stands for Local Education Agency, and that is what our school district is. It's a local education agency. So any school district that receives Title I funds is required to put something like this together. It's a guideline to inform your school's Title I parent involvement policy or your parent involvement policy, because you might not be a Title I school. And it also speaks to some of the other advisory bodies because we had them weigh in. And so you'll see, well, you may not see, but if you turn it over onto the back, at the very bottom, there is a little legend there. So it tells you that the red font were additions from advisory groups, blue font was the DAC feedback, and the black came from the state template. So the federal program monitoring office comes down and they actually review this every year. So there are things that they want to see in it. There are things that we really can't change. The additions that we added were part of a discussion between each of our advisory bodies here in San Diego Unified. So we had our English Language Advisory Council. We had our CAC, our Community Advocacy Committee for Special Education. We had the DAC, of course, and then we also had, I think that was it. Was that the input? Yeah, so the major advisory bodies were able to weigh in on this. So this is a second read and a vote to approve. Did anybody have any commentary or questions or anything that they had at their SSC meetings that they wanted to bring back and share? This is one of the things we do. One of the purposes that we serve is a forum for questions from your SSC. You can bring them here and have them answered. We have extremely knowledgeable staff that can help answer those questions, or fellow SSC members that might be sitting amongst you. I'm sorry, DAC members who might be sitting amongst you. So we also ask that you take things back to your school site and then bring back any feedback or questions that they might have. So we've created a communication mechanism for each school site. So yes, is there a question? Yes, and I'm sorry, I'm asking just if you could go to the microphone. Every question we have has to be posed on the microphone so we can have it recorded for the minutes and for accuracy. Thank okay. you. Just say your school site and your name, please.
Crystal Marston Middle School and Holmes Elementary, representing both. So if this is approved tonight, is it required for the sites to adopt if they're Title I?
No, very good question. So this is a district level document, so it covers the entire district. Each school site creates their own parent involvement policy and school home compact. So there are different documents that go home usually at the beginning of the school year. You typically see them in the welcome packets. So those instruments are also required to be dispersed to school sites. This document just covers the district. So it's you can review, and I suggest that everyone at the school sites review it, because you might want to add some of these suggestions or some of these some of this language to your own school site Title I parent involvement policy or parent involvement policy. And there's a template for that as well that comes down from the state, so we don't really have to do a lot of work. But it also, the red and the blue font gives you an opportunity to see what more can be added to make it a more of a living document. Go ahead.
Do you remember what they added for parent centers? Because that was a discussion last year regarding parent centers. Because we had mentioned that we should have parent centers at all schools to make parents welcomed.
I believe that it's in there.
I don't see it. That's why I'm asking.
I know that this was that this there was a lengthy discussion about this, so I know that we retained some of the language.
And who's we? Who took out stuff?
We didn't take anything out. We really merely added. We took out things that were redundant because we had a very lengthy document that basically had similar things kind of in different sections. And so when we got the new instrument from the state, we actually were able to make it a little more concise. I know we have it in there.
Okay, did they call it? I think I just found it. Yeah. It might be on page 5.
Yeah, we
community centers instead of parent centers.
Yes, exactly. And we want to call, and I think that that language is used because we don't want to limit it to just parents, because we have guardians, we have community members that participate in school site council
right.
level.
And do you know if these community centers are the very few ones that they have throughout the district?
You know, remember,
like the one they have at Mann?
This is a guideline, so this does not make anything mandatory. So we know that instruments like this exist, but they all depend on funding behind it and a commitment from our Board of Education to vote to fund things like that. So it's not, I don't think that this instrument can mandate anything, and I think that was kind of one of the issues that we had. Yes.
And also, everybody that's on the SSC should have met with their SSC to review your parent involvement policy.
Those are part of the SSC timeline, yes. All right, so if there isn't any further discussion or questions, we can go ahead and vote. And we'll be voting. I will actually have to take a motion from the floor, so if somebody would move to either approve or, move to approve the document. Roosevelt, and a second from Riley. All right, so any other further discussion? Okay, so we have all those in favor for approving this document so we can send it to the board. Go ahead and raise your blue card. Thank you. And we have several people counting, so make sure you raise them high. Thank you. And I appreciate that there are so many of you that we have to count. It takes a little bit longer.
And how many do we need for a quorum? Thank you.
Oh, that's already been established.
I know, but how many do we need for a quorum?
It is 27 today. It's a percentage based on our accepted rosters, our approved rosters. Yes, did you have a question? They're good. It's actually 25% of the approved rosters.
Sorry, if anybody needs English packets, raise your hand.
English packets. All right. Fantastic. All right. Moving on to our next topic. I'm sorry, any abstentions? Yes, any abstentions? We have two. Anybody else? Abstentions? Okay. And any abstentions? Objections and abstentions. Thank you. Abstentions. No abstentions. Okay. All right. All right. So next up, we have our DAC officer elections. And we do have... We had three volunteers from our meeting last time who had volunteered to pick up our ballots and do the official count. And so I see one and two. All right, and I don't see my third. Then I'll ask my volunteers to just be at the ready. Once you're done, I'd appreciate if you could help collect, and then we'll send you out to do the count. It usually takes a few minutes, Thankfully, tonight it might take a little longer because we have so many of you here. Thank you. I was so pleasantly surprised when I pulled into the parking lot.
Susie, just to be clear,
yes.
Only schools with a blue card. So thank you.
So make sure that you have your blue card present because only schools that have approved rosters that have blue cards are able to vote in tonight's officer election. And I'm going to help hand out the ballots. We'll give everybody a few minutes. Make sure everybody understands the ballot here. So the chair section is there at the top. There's also space for write-in candidates. As of this time, we don't have a candidate for the first vice chair. And then you'll see the second vice chair. So you want to vote for one. Sure. So, Mary had suggested that I have the candidate stand. So, for the office of chair, Debbie Hamilton and Valentina Hernandez. And then for the office of second vice chair, we have Debbie Hamilton and Valentina Hernandez. All right. Thank you very much.
And Ben White.
Debbie Rayner from Challenger.
Yes. Hi, Debbie.
I would like, can we put someone on the ballot now or is it too late?
You are more than welcome to put someone in the write-in, put someone in the space for the write-in, which is why we provide this space. And also, I just want to make sure that when you're doing your SSC elections, you're also providing for a write-in candidate as well. I don't know, I think that a motion you might be able to make a motion for an inclusion. So if that's, we just can't.
So Debbie Rayner from.
That's where you're going to have me say my name so you can't remember. Or write it.
Well, you have to listen to her. She's actually at the podium speaking and we need to let her make her motion. She's making a motion. Let's let her make a motion.
Tell me what I call it again.
Motion to nominate a write-in candidate.
I make a motion to nominate a write-in candidate for first vice president, and that would be Susie Reed. First chair.
All right. Do we have a second for that motion? Show a blue card. All right. Second for Mancanto. All right. For Susie Reed, that would be me. So those in favor, all All those in favor for approving, or yes, is there discussion? Feel free, is there discussion? All right, all those in favor of approving a nomination for a write-in candidate as Susie Reed, raise your blue card. The first one. People counting, so hold your blue cards. Thank you. All right, we have the count, and so any opposed? And any abstentions? We have one abstention. All right. Thank you. That motion is approved. Yes.
Go ahead. Christopher Wirt Hawthorne. I have one of those point of order questions. Are we also allowed to write in people who aren't currently on and whose principals haven't turned in their rosters and hence are out of it, or are they not allowed?
Unfortunately, no. If the person is not on a current valid roster that's been accepted by the...
Are we allowed to personally burn a principal's name in effigy right now because they didn't get someone on the roster and, you know...
That is something that I highly recommend you take up with the resource teacher within your area and also, you know, with your principal as well.
I'm not actually speaking of me. I'm speaking of a different victim.
Yes, no, I totally understand. I also want to remind people that if you've shown up to a meeting and your name is not on any of those sign-in sheets, and if you are not on a valid roster, our rosters were due on the 4th of October. This is the only way that we can get business done. So if you are not on an approved roster, we cannot establish quorum, and so it is a problem. And I express this to principals that I talk to. And so if you're a school site council chair, you are the one who you have to sign that roster in order to get it sent to the district, and it has to be a physical copy. It can't be an electronic copy. So make sure that you are doing your part to kind of push your principal or push your SSC chair or bring it up. But it's important that, yes, everybody has to be on a valid roster, unfortunately.
Especially when you have a new principal, they might not turn it in on time. It's not your fault. I want to add myself as a second write-in candidate for the first.
Valentina.
No, I'm making a motion to add myself, Valentina Hernandez, for the office of the first vice chair since nobody else is on there. Is there a second?
Is there a second for that motion? All right, there is no second for that motion. We are going to move on. Is everyone finished with their ballots? Oh, we have a second. Do we have a second for that motion?
No.
All right, is everyone finished with their ballots? I'm gonna have our elections committee, Anne. And our friend from Riley, there is no crying in kickball, you're right. I love that. That's fantastic. All right, so please go ahead and turn your ballots in to our fabulous elections committee. And they're gonna go ahead and count those for us. Thank you for everyone for your patience.
Thank you.
our elections committee is going around and picking up, I am going to make sure we kind of keep along here so we don't take up anybody's time. We want to make sure we finish on time. We have a take to your SSCs is next up on our agenda. And I just want to make sure everyone has got a copy of this peach. And typically it's Spanish on the back, so I don't know if there's... Oh, they have Spanish packets. Excellent. So yellow. Our take to your SSCs in Spanish is on a yellow copy. This is a great document you can use. It's kind of a checkoff box that you can take to your school site council. Hopefully, every meeting you have, the agenda offers you a place and a space to provide DAC feedback or a DAC report out, as should your school site council provide a report out for the DLAC and the Community Advisory Council for Special Education. Or our GATE District Advisory Council, because we also have that advisory body. wrong light, please. So, and we have a couple, we do have the URL on the bottom to our SSC webpage that also provides some great resources and some training videos. So if you're feeling like things are a little confusing and you wanted to get a little more clarity on things, that's School Site Council or SSC website, and Mary's going to pull it up for you so you can get a chance to see what it looks like. We have a lot of resources on there, training videos. They're mostly PDFs with voiceover from the lovely Mary Johnson. And but they're very informative. We have a budget video that gives a great broad view of our budget here at the district and what different budget streams we have and those things. So, yes, we have slew internet. All right. So please be sure to take that to your and I, you know, if I don't remember anything else to bring to my SSC meeting, I have this because everything is on the website in our agenda through board docs. So you just need to click on meeting agendas and information, and every presentation you see here, we should have all of those. If we don't have them now, we should have them all uploaded by Friday. So great space for resource. The incredible SSC handbook, which I believe everybody got a copy of tonight. So this is the handbook on how to have an SSC. And it's very, very informative, gets updated every year. And it is also an incredible tool because it tells the principals exactly how these things are supposed to work. And you have a copy, so you know exactly how these things are supposed to work, so you can be the most effective support for your principal, for your teachers, and for the rest of your SSC members. And so I suggest sharing that. It's got templates in there. If you aren't using a template agenda, it has an example of a template agenda. Everything is digital, so you can grab those from the website. We also have our SSC DAC timeline, which is great because if you're an SSC chair, maybe you're new this year, you're not sure what to put on the agenda, we have some bullet points there that you want to cover. And we also list the things that we cover here generally every month. And we try to cover the same things because the budget cycle is always the same. So we have a lot of the same things that we take care of. So I'm going to give the elections committee a few more minutes. But I am going to bring up Ms. Pamela King. Are you in the audience out there? Ms. Pamela King is our, she's a manager, program manager with our family engagement department. And she gives us a little rundown every month of what's going on in family engagement and events and things available for parents. Please take these resources back to your school site. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. I didn't want to forgetting anything, so I actually wrote it down like twice. I have to write things to remember. So the first thing I want to do is I want to thank the DAC for being involved in our fall celebration, Parents of Our Partners Volunteer Recruitment Fair. Anyone here participated or came out on October the 29th? We had free costumes on the front line. Of course. So we were on the front line of the Ed Center, and we had a volunteer recruitment fair, and we were giving away costumes. I came before and gave you guys a flyer about it. And so what we did was we had everyone there who's a part of the volunteer process. HR to help with the application on the spot. We had the nursing, and they were giving the TV questionnaire. We had police services, because people have questions about, why do I need to get the background check? They're the experts to answer those questions. We had food services, because when you're coming out, you want to have a snack, and they had some great refreshments there, and we had the district advisory committee. So we had DAC, we had CAC, DLAC, we had the gay DAC, we had the PTA there, as well as our outstanding family engagement department, Joanna. Was. So we had costumes. We had no clue how many costumes were going to come. We had 10 pallets of costumes. The event was only from 3:30 to 4:45. We gave out close to 400 costumes. Outstanding job for the first day. Because it's like a retail store. And then we had entertainment from students, performers. So we had the Rosa Park Ballet Folklorical, beautiful. And then we had SCPA Jazz Ensemble. And they were like professionals out there. So it was an hour and 15 minutes of fun. I tell you, we had over 40 parents or prospective volunteers sign up, fill out applications to get the TV questionnaires from different school sites, elementary and secondary. So I want to thank you. We're going to do that continuously. We're thinking not just annually, maybe do something in spring to have that go along as well. I want you to know that tomorrow is National Parent Involvement Day. And so thank you for being involved. And then I want to tell you that the district actually signed a resolution, and they joined the PTA to honor this day. And they don't make it, they said it's not National Parent Involvement, it's National Parent and Family Involvement Day, because we know we have grandparents, we have guardians, we have different family members. So they celebrate this day, and they are asking schools to do something special for the families. And so they had the resolution on November the 12th at the board meeting. So at our neighborhood centers, we're going to be celebrating parents. We're going to have celebrations. We have five neighborhood centers. Mann, Memorial, Montgomery, Knox, and Bell. Thank you very much. And so starting in December, we're going to have a celebration. We'll have all that information on our events calendar or our website. Tell the exact time and date. You'll be able to engage in some activities, celebrate youth cultural activities, as well as give us some LCAP feedback. The next thing that we have is we just celebrated 10 years of Project Ujima. Anyone ever attended Project Ujima? 10 years. That's a long time for a program, so we just celebrate that. That program was dedicated or created to close the achievement gap with African American students. And so we wanted to have positive educational outcomes for African American students of all ages, but it's open to everyone. So just from a cultural perspective, getting families involved. So we just celebrated 10 years of that. And then I want to tell you about some upcoming events, because I know I have 5 minutes. And so some upcoming events we have. You can see we have math workshops, but tomorrow we have a math workshop at Rosa Parks, and that's going to be at 7:45. Let me tell you, we're not just doing number sense, we're going deeper. We're listening to what parents say, hey, we need some help with addition, subtraction, we need help from occupation, we don't understand place value. So we have credential teachers who are the Central Office of Resource Teachers, and we work together to create these PowerPoints. So we have a math at Faith, as well as SALT. Anyone here from SALT? We have reading behaviors. So when you go to your child's conference, they say they're level D. What does it really mean? We're going to support you and help you understand what it means and how to get them to the next level. Ross has one on Friday at 7:45. And then Bell Middle School, if you need some help with computer basic, we do that as well. So check out our website. Mary, if you can click on volunteers as quickly. We upgrade it. because it was a little too busy, so we're always trying to, we're listening to feedback, but we're trying to do things to make sure it's easier for you. So we have the Make a Difference, Become a Volunteer, along with the theme that we just had. As you're strolling down, they'll tell you some things that that you would need in order to volunteer, but then it has the categories for you. So if you want to know why category A was some examples, category B, C, and D, we have it there for you. So you'll be able to just one click away. The applications are there as well. Thank you.
That was excellent. I like to share this information with my cluster as well. I don't know how many people attend their cluster meetings. I cannot be the only one. Oh, excellent. And this is a great resource. And if your school site doesn't know about it, please let them know, because PTA also collaborates with the Family Engagement Department. And so their events are also listed on there. And it's really nice. We've been asking for a calendar like this forever as far as parent advisory chairs, so we're happy to see it. Thank you, Pamela. All right, so next up we have a presentation from Ms. Teresa Laskowski on our English language learners. These are updates that are given at the board generally, and so the executive team meets with the presenter generally beforehand to kind of narrow it down a little bit more to our audience and to our group here, and also to make it shorter, they get a half an hour. Here she gets, well, they usually get, what, an hour for presentation there, and so we have to make it a little smaller. So. Oh, there we go. All right, so please give Teresa your attention. She's our Instructional Support Officer with the Office of Leadership and Learning.
Good evening, everyone. I want to thank you all for coming tonight and supporting and representing your school sites. It's really lovely to come out and see parents being involved and being politically involved. My first choice is not to be politically involved when I first came to teaching, and look at me. I'm one of the leading people in our district to lead for political reasons with the work that I do around English language learners. So we're going to dive into our LCAP Goal 2, which is one of the goals that is access to broad and challenging curriculum. So here is a California state vision. You don't really have access, so I'm just going to highlight a couple of the words in here. I won't read it to you. Do they have access to the PowerPoint? It's uploaded. Okay, very good. So you can go back. But on the first line, there's this word that's on the first line. It says connections. When you go to the third, it says educational opportunities. And then there's some lines that say classrooms should foster language acquisition, literacy development, leverage students' identities, and transform the world. And when I think about the work that we do in classrooms, that's what we're about. That's what we try and strive to do. And I know that that's your hope for your students as well. As you think about preparing them for the world, that's what you want them to be able to do. Take their voice and take their beautiful gifts and transform this world, however big or small, that they can have that impact on the world. So we're so grateful that California not only supports that idea, but supports the idea of students being multilingual. So this slide talks about opportunity to precedes skills. What that means is normally we want the child to come with skills and then we give them the opportunity. And we're kind of flipping the script here because we're saying, how can we provide the opportunity and then have the students develop the skills that they need to be successful? So when we think about that in education, usually we say, oh, we want students to have a certain prerequisite before they, right? So what about if we do more of an apprenticeship in, let me give you
the opportunity to learn some skills so that you can be in that opportunity and grow in that opportunity. So it's a little bit of a shift in thinking and mindset. So we have a student here from, she graduated, one of our high school students from Kearney Cluster, and we'd like for you to listen to her voice and her experience at school. And keep in mind, this is one of the aspirations that we have as a district to continue to support you and your children to be able to have an experience like this at each and every school.
So when we're just here at the school and being rewarded,
it's okay, you just have the yeah, is it not?
The YouTube screen here is not switching.
Jennifer Garcia. I'm kind of glad that you didn't get to see the visual and you got to hear her language and some of the words that she was saying. It probably helped you to really listen and key into some of the things she was saying. So that being said, I highlighted a few of the words that she repeated, and she talked about countless opportunities being given to her at school, how she gained confidence, how she felt like she was on the right path. She looked forward to coming to school. How many high schoolers say that? How many elementary school kids say that? Sometimes they're like, I don't want to go to school. I'd rather play Legos. She talked about being pushed and challenged. She said she takes risks and that it's okay to make mistakes and that she wanted to come back and give back to fellow students. So I just felt very moved by what she was saying, and I'm hoping that you'll be able to play this if you have a moment with your SSCs back at your school sites. So So we're going to take a look at a little bit of data. I realize data is always difficult to see when you are in a room like this and it's being projected. You can go ahead and. So this is an image of the percent of students who graduated completing A through G requirements. As you can see, there's two bars. The first bar in each of these represents 2013, and the second bar represents 2019. So you can see the change and the growth within all of our subgroups. The first bar here represents all students within our district. So the first bar reads 50.3% in 2013, and in 2019, 72.7% of our students graduated with A through G. So that's quite exciting. And there was a shift. I won't go through everyone, but you can see for our English learners, for example, we started out at 14.4, and in that amount of time went up to 48.7. We know that's not ideal. There's still a lot of work to be done, but we are making gains and on the right trajectory. If you look at our African American students, you see another significant gain from 38.7 to 66.7. And then low income from 40% to 66.1. So we've made some significant gains with all of our subgroups.
What was the Latino one?
Hispanic says 35% on the first bar, and then in 2019 it's 65.5. Thank you for asking. So this is an image of our 2013 on the first bar and 2018 graduation rates by subgroup. So the CDE changed how it calculated the graduation rate. The state estimated that there would be a 2-3% decrease in the statewide graduation rates because of that calculation. So you can see the comparison data is kind of flat, and that's why. So if you're wondering how come there doesn't seem to be significant gains, that's why there was a change. But you can see, for example, in the English learner bar, in 2013 it was 66.5, and then in 2018 it was 70.4, so there was a little bit of a jump in that. So this data represents the students who were completers, and this is a year after graduation. So the data represents graduates who attended a college within 12 months of graduating high school. So this is kind of interesting. The blue bar represents the district, and the green bar represents the state. And in each one of our subgroups, the district outperformed the state percentages. So that's a huge celebration. So thanks to all of our parents and families for trusting us and sending your students to schools. We're seeing that with that foundation of the educational experience, they go on to college, and that they're outperforming their state counterparts, which is quite exciting. You can go to the next one. So this is data from our annual standards-based assessment. We call it the SBAC and ELA. So this is information on our English language learners. It looks quite confusing, and it is very confusing. So I'll just kind of give you an example. The blue bar, the first bar in each one of these years, represents just the percent of English learners. The green bar represents the students who
well, I should go to the gray bar. The gray bar represents the students who were reclassified. So the first bar is English learner. The third bar is reclassified students. This second bar, which is the green bar, is the average between the English learners and the reclassified students. That's the average number. And then this bar, the final bar, the fourth bar, represents the English only and the initial fluent proficient students. So students considered English only.
Can we get a copy of that report?
I believe you said it's in the, on the website, it's posted.
Can we get a copy?
You have a copy. You will get a copy tomorrow at the DLAC meeting, Valentina. So I want to just do a quick comparison for the 2018. If we look at the gap, most people look at the gap. Most people look at the gap. Are you sure this is of the ELA? Look at the gap between English learners and our English-only students, and you see a significant gap, which would be 53.6%. But when you look at the gap, the true gap between the English learners, which are these two bars, the second bar and the fourth bar, then the gap is significantly different, and it's 26.2%. So this, our data is quite confusing when you look at it. So understanding each group and subgroup and what it means really matters. So then we can look at that same type of data on the English. And you can see there's a significant difference, again, between our students who are English learners. And what I mean by that is that kind of beginning stage of English learners, not necessarily having students who were reclassified in the system and have already been through their sequence of learning with English language development.
She had a question.
Oh, sorry, didn't see it.
Those discrete numbers are any of those
numbers. That's what I was saying, because this is the overlap.
Okay, so the green bar is representative of which of the following?
These two. It's the average between these two.
So of the 16.3 English learners, 32.3% did what?
That's the comparison we're making with the English-only counterparts, the gap. Rather than looking at this number to this number, we're looking at this number to this number. Because this is kind of the blending of all the English learners, meaning both subgroups, rather than separating. Because a lot of times people... Oh, that's a district calculation. I don't do that. There's a lot of data there, yeah. I don't think they have. They publish these from these Excel tables with tons of numbers. So there's formulas that they use, and then they create the pivot table in the table that you see here. Yeah, that's not my realm. Okay, we can go over. So this is an image of, and I'll read this to you, this is what our district-wide professional learning vision is. This is what each and every principal within our district, our area superintendents, and the entire system is focused on. This is the third year. We've kind of made some tweaks along the way. It says, our work is about widening the sphere of success by engineering equitable learning conditions for all students. We believe classrooms can be places of hope where teachers and students imagine the kind of society we could live in, and where educators design meaningful and inclusive educational experiences in order for students to be agents of change and make this hope a reality. At first, we talked about students, putting them into the sphere of success, and then we thought, that's again thinking about that. We want to give the kids the skills before they're successful. So taking a step back and saying, what if we widen the sphere of success, and they're already included in that success? That's a difference. So it's about engineering those educational opportunities in order for them to feel successful and feel like they belong. We can move forward. That translates into this image. And we use this image to show you that our instructional priorities are based on research. We have worked with the Marzano Research Group, and they have three tiers of high reliability schools that they know will help schools be successful. So the rungs are safe, collaborative, and inclusive cultures, which we'll just call classroom cultures, a guaranteed viable curriculum, which is about the resources we use and the standards we use for teaching children, and this idea of effective instruction in every classroom. You may have heard that referred to as tier one instruction. The district, in thinking about how to widen the sphere of success, has focused on two particular subgroups. Those subgroups are English learners and students with disabilities. We know historically these students have needed additional supports inside and outside of the classroom. So as a district, we are really taking a hard look and studying what do we need to do differently? How do we support our students differently? And that's where those levels of support come in. So you can see at the center, we have our students. You can click. So in order to help us understand this, we've kind of dissected that circle that you saw. So looking at classroom cultures, we focused on this idea of ownership. So in the years past, the Office of Language Acquisition have kind of been the keepers of the knowledge and the doers for English learners. And schools came to rely upon the OLA, or the Office of Language Acquisition, and their support teachers to come in and support those students exclusively. So they would pull the English learners out and teach small groups, or even push into the classrooms and be the responsible ones for the teaching and learning of those students. So when we're thinking about how we do our work differently, we felt that it's important for the classroom teacher to gain those skills for that effective tier one instruction. So that's part of the shift, and it's a change in a belief system. So you can see that idea of shared belief system, that idea of valuing students for what they bring to the classroom, knowing that every student, regardless of their level of language, has life experiences, and their barrier is the language, the second language that they're learning. So we can click forward. Access to the curriculum. This year in particular, the Office of Language Acquisition worked very hard with the district. And I'll say after the fact, I'll own that. After September, we solidified getting some supports for our students, and we were able to provide online supports with all of our elementary schools with Benchmark, Advancing Language Learners. Amplify ELD for middle school, that's digital access. For high school, we have Springboard, and that's both digital and hard copy. For our long-term English learners, that's students, English learners who are students, who have been in our system, who have not reclassified, meaning that they have not acquired proficiency in English language yet. And so for them, we have purchased English 3D, which is a curricular support for one of our courses called ALD, which is Academic Language Development. And then there's also a course for high school grade 12 called ERWC ELD, and that's a writing unit. It's expository reading and writing course. So this is helping us to be aligned together. These are supplemental materials that were purchased this year for all of our teachers and students who are English learners. You can advance the slide. and you're fine, effective instruction. This is just an overview of some of the professional development we provide to principals at the Principal Institute, extending voluntary sessions for principals, having district-wide PD for teachers, and this year we have a job-embedded coaching with our LERTs where they are coming to school sites for 1 week, four times within this year to support with the curricular resources, the implementation of those. You can slide. We had this opportunity to work with, I don't know how many of you know, and oh my God, the name's slipping me right now. Brené Brown. I don't know how many of you have heard Brené. Oh, thanks. She said it's right here. It's been a long day. My dogs woke me up at 3 o'clock this morning, so I'm like reeling right now, like, oh my God. Anyway, we had an opportunity to work with a presenter who trained with Brené Brown, and she talked about this idea, we must cultivate a culture in which brave work, tough conversations, and whole hearts are the expectation. And armor is not necessary or rewarded. The idea of armor is, I'm sure you can all relate, sometimes when you're in tough conversations or you get feedback or information from someone who may not be the best kind of thing you want to hear at that moment, or it might come a little aggressive, or it might sound like it's blaming or shaming, normally we armor up and we're ready to defend and we're ready to come at you and we're ready to come for you in a way to put you down or to kind of level the playing field, like, oh yeah, you're gonna come at me? Well, I'm gonna show you what I have up my sleeve, right? So this idea that we're bringing it down, taking a learner stance, staying curious, because within that emotion and in that feedback, that's someone's experience and perspective. And that's their truth. And we're not gonna change their truth because of our truth. So it's how do we listen to understand in order to reshape and come to a common understanding about what we want for students. So last year, February or March, the district was participating in what's called the Federal Program Monitoring Review, and the Office of Language Acquisition was in that, along with some of the other district departments, and there was some information that we got that caused us to pause and regroup and have to rethink the way in which we provided our services and the way in which we delivered our message. So I went to my teacher, like hat, and said, oh, well, that's just kind of like the continuous learning experience. You get some data, it tells you about what you've been doing, and this data told us what you're doing may not be working 100% of the time. So you assess that, you make a plan, you execute the plan, and then you review your plan. So I received feedback. I tried not to armor up, although I had moments at home where I armored up. And really analyze what we were doing to serve our English learners. It was a very sobering moment, I have to say. However, I think we all rose to the opportunity to change what needed to be changed. Even though it was really difficult at times, I think it was super necessary, and I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity that we had to learn from the data that we had, so we can move forward. So with that being said, we gathered around and were able to come up with an English learner call to action. And in this document, we made it clear for our site principals the requirements that were necessary for not only our department, but for all our schools to serve our English learners. So again, transparency with our schools and our leaders, our school leaders, so it's not just this idea. One of my conclusions was the Office of Language Acquisition had been a department of the oral tradition. I will tell you what you need to do for your English learners, and I'll expect you to do it, because I just told you. So the feedback we got was, hey, that's not to them too well. So we went through and just meticulously came up with processes and protocols and procedures in-house in order for us to roll that out to our schools and our within our own department. So now when we onboard, we have processes in place. This is a key document that we can use, and we will refine and continuously use this as a touchstone text for our work. Long-term English learner. Yes, thank you. She asked, what does LTEL mean? L-T-E-L, and that means a long-term English learner. And that is somebody who's an English learner, was not reclassified within the estimated time for them to reclassify. Making annual gains, that is. So we worked with, Tom, I just want to say FPMA department, but it's the Finance and Planning and Monitoring Accountability Department, I guess. I don't know. It's just this long acronym. And we have an English learner tab. We revised the SPSA. As you know, your school sites really did have to do some deep learning. This was a long process for our principals. Everyone was learning at the same time. And so you may have seen this, and you'll be seeing it again this year, right, Mary? Okay, so we can click forward. So there's an EL tab I just wanted to point out with some goals.
Not only because this came up, but our SSME. Is there a...
Yes. Just your name and yours.
Philippe Frazier at TAP, middle. It came up, the issue of pulling an English learner out of a... not giving them the opportunity to have a elective. And it was a big issue with the reclassification. Is there a middle ground or something we can do to keep that?
Very good. I'm so glad you're here. So that's a very complex question. It truly depends on the student. There are various scenarios that we can take. According to the state, every English learner is required to take an ELD or an ALD class. The ELD means English Language Development class until they reclassify, and then ALD means a academic development academic language development class. So until they reclassify. However, is you can work with your site principal to come up with some possibilities to explore with the families on a case-by-case basis. I cannot give, in good faith, give you a declaration of a path because each case is different. It depends on their level of language acquisition. It depends on how many years they've been in the system. So there's so many variations, and at high school it gets even more complex. So being at a middle school, not override the law. The parent can engage in a conversation with the site leader about those options. And there is a waiver that the parent can request. However, if the parent requests that waiver from the coursework, the student is still required to take the annual language exam, which is called the LPAC. So they would still be required to take the summative test annually and make gains, and if not, that's going to be another conversation. Thank you for your question. Okay. So you kind of help move into the next slide where area superintendents have been in contact with each and every principal at all levels. So we have collected data for each school, for each student who is enrolled or not enrolled in an English support, I'll say English language support class, and those conversations are happening. So it's student by student. That we've gathered this data and principals have had access and are in conversation. So your question was timely. So I think I will close. Is this the last slide? Very good. With another daring greatly. Going back to that idea of having tough conversations, looking at each one of our students and their context to make these decisions. It is the state law that we provide those supports for them and that we don't create what we have right now, those long-term English learners. We want them to reclassify and to eliminate any language barrier that prohibits them from graduation or any other opportunity in their life. So is there a question and answer right now? Okay, so we'll open that up. Thank you for your listening to that long explanation. Either way.
Take your pick.
Go right ahead. And while she's walking up there, we are going to be asking for your feedback. So we're going to be handing out some iPads, and we do want to have some group discussions and just get some feedback from you on what this looks like at your site. What's in your question?
So back to the college slide where they attended college. Basically, my questions are, how are you tracking those kids? And are you counting that they were enrolled or that they actually successfully completed their first year of college?
I'm not tracking that data.
Wherever you got that data.
Our data assessment people are. I do not have that answer for you. I can't answer that. I can see if I can connect with Ron Rohde, although I won't promise. I'll try to write that down for me, if we could write that question down, because everyone's going on vacation, and I will do my very, very best to get that information for your next meeting. So if somebody could jot that, or if you could jot it down on a sticky note for me, that would be lovely. Any other questions?
Star Pleasant Morris High School. My question was about the new programs that you purchased. Does that that purchasing of that equipment or programming, does that also consider training the instructors and such that are going to be able to help instruct and facilitate those programs? Is it already set and done, or is that still needing to be done?
So very good question. And there's not one quick answer for you. So at the elementary level, at all levels, there is and is ongoing PD. So we have provided PD at the elementary level, middle school, and high school is forthcoming. So we kind of staggered the purchases and the implementation for these. So we started out with elementary. They have online only. And we did, was that Tuesday of this week? We had a English 3D training for middle school. So middle school has had training and elementary has had training. High school, we've had training for some pilot schools who were piloting a version, and there will be training that is coming up for schools, for high schools. So that's a not yet. When I talked about the Office of Language Acquisition, LERTs, our English Language Instructional Resource Teachers, they're going out to school sites for that 1 week increment, four times a year, to help support with the implementation of the curricular resources. So the lovely thing about the possibilities with online learning is teachers have them, they can explore, right? Students have access. The hard copy materials, you don't have that opportunity. So I'm grateful that there's opportunity. So there is ongoing PD that has happened for certain levels within our district, but not 100% yet.
I'm the DLEC vice chairperson, and she's part of my department. But anyways, I want to say that I messed up again. I was going to say something about the, oh, how much did that program cost, the different programs, how much did that cost?
So I'm not part of the finance committee. I was part of supporting the process to get the materials.
And so are all schools going to get the materials?
As I said earlier, all of our elementary schools have access to the Benchmark ALL. All of our middle schools have access to the Amplify ELD as well as the English 3D. Our high schools is spotty because we have certain schools that already have access to Springboard, but not everybody yet.
Does Hoover have it?
Hoover, I don't think Hoover was one of the pilot, no, they're not one of the pilot schools.
Okay, so only pilot schools are getting it.
No. Everyone is getting it.
But you just don't know when.
No, I know when. We have support, we have, so because it's staggered, and I'm trying to keep them all straight in my head, for high school, we're pushing out the digital access for 3D for teachers of roster. And the gentleman over here from Taft talked about the what if students. So we have these pockets where teachers are going to teach the what if. And that's the information we still need to gather from our principals at the high school level. Because that's going to be 1 year remedies for this year only.
And who's going to monitor it and make sure that the teachers that got trained are actually doing it?
Also
the effectiveness of the programs.
All of us are responsible for doing that work. So the site leaders do classroom walkthroughs as part of their instructional walks. OLA has the LERTs going through, and the administration from OLA is also scheduling walkthroughs at school sites. So we are all working together. Area superintendents have what they call bookends, and I know my time's probably up, but the area superintendents have bookends where they're going to meet with each one of their site leaders at two points in the year to talk and monitor English learners. I've gone out with the chief of staff to high schools, and we're going out monitoring as well. So I want you all to know that monitoring is being scheduled and is happening within the district. So I know my time is up. I'm so grateful.
And for her question, really quick, I know that Hoover, for the College Avenue Compact, they do monitor the students at Hoover that are in the College Avenue Compact program, what colleges they go to and how they're doing. They're starting to track that, which is very important.
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa. I want to give everyone an opportunity to provide some feedback. So we have iPads going around. I know a lot of people have their devices or have their computers. So the actual survey link is here. The iPad is not the easiest to use, and I wish that we could do something a little bit better about that. But as we are in a very digital age, everyone who has access to and can use their cell phones, if not, partner up with our iPad holders at the table. So the questions are really based around our local control and accountability plan. And goal two is focused on our broad and challenging curriculum, which is where our English language presentation, English language development, a lot of our goals around our English language learners live. So we want to see and we want to know how this is working at your school site. I think it's scary, reverberating. So we have, hopefully I'm not staying in the way. Very robust LCAP, and so it's hard for us. Thank you, Tom. We have a hard time bringing it to everyone in its full entirety. So these little
micro presentations help give us a sense of what the district is doing, and this speaks to the goals and some of those action items and services that are in the LTAP. And this is the district's work plan for all of us and how the money gets spent. So tell us how English language development is at your school. Tell us what is happening or what needs to be happening more at your school site. Are you getting any of those English language development materials? Give us some feedback. You have a question? You can, if you are a single person answering it just on your own, just go ahead and put one. If you're answering it in a group of two or three people, put two. It just gives us a sense of how many people are having this conversation. And the answers to these surveys go directly to the presenter. So Teresa gets a copy of this. So any questions you have, any information, any feedback you want the District Office of Language Acquisition to have, this is the best opportunity to provide that. You can do it on your phone, you can do it on your laptop, you can do it on the iPad. We do provide iPads, so anybody who doesn't have a digital device can provide that. I'm going to give everybody about 7 minutes. I'm sorry that's not a lot of time. If I can stretch it, I will.
Asking how would they discuss this?
All right. Everybody sounds like they're starting to converse a little more. I hope this spurs conversations. I hate making everybody stop their discussion. I know you're not ready. Go ahead and add, and remember that this is now attached to your phone. You can finish it up later. You can send it in. You can actually share that survey with your SSC members. Have them check out the presentation. I just emailed everyone at my SSC mine. The link is actually attached to our DAC page. It'll say LCAP survey. So our list of resources in alphabetical order, LCAP survey. All right, we do. Our translator is trying to translate, so he's having a little bit of a hard time. So I'm just going to have everybody wrap it back up. We have a few more minutes until we have to call it a night. So I want to give Tom an opportunity. Yeah, Title I balances and Title I ranking coming up. So I want to make sure we get that in and respect everyone's time. But first, I'm going to have Mary read the election results. Yes, you. It makes me feel awkward reading it myself.
I've seen this for the first time, so give me this one. Okay, so for chair, we have Debbie Hamilton. For first, we have Susie Reed. And for second, we have Valentina Hernandez. Congratulations, everyone, and thank you for running.
Thank you, everyone. And now I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Thomas Liberto. He's going to give you a little Title I information.
I'm going to do it as quickly as I can, but as thoroughly as I can. I just want to say, Susie said to me, I hate bringing up the discussion. That's a really hard job. And then I was about to say to her, the only thing worse than breaking up the discussion is being the following speaker after breaking up the discussion. I really do appreciate all of your input, and I wanted to start by saying I really appreciate you being here tonight. You kind of, with all of the rain, I was telling the staff, well, I'm a little worried we're not going to get people to come, and then this is one of the biggest groups we've had. So it's really proof to your dedication, and I appreciate it very, very much, and keep coming because we want to make these as powerful as we can. It only works when you're here, so thank you so, so much. The first one that I'm going to talk about is, it looks like this. I'm sorry for those of you that are in the back, but it's a really small print. And can you get it up there? So you didn't know you were going to get an eye test this evening, but I'm okay. If you were here last month, I did a real quick overall view of what the Title I base allocation and ranking is. Our district bases Title I ranking and qualification on free and reduced lunch. So any school that has 40% or more students that qualify for free and reduced lunch then qualifies for Title I program, meaning the Title I dollars. And there are various allocations within that Title I allotment. The biggest one is the Title I base grant. So that's what every school that's in Title I gets. We basically take a $15.5 million allocation out of the complete allocation that the district gets, and we distribute that right out to schools. Now, I have to tell you, that's not a requirement from the Title I allocation. The district can retain all of the dollars. However, over the years, our school boards have made the decision that we want to support schools and let them make the local decisions. So we take $15.5 million, and push those right out to schools. Great. That is based on what we call a decrement system. That's what I basically went over last month. So if you have a school that's got 100% Title I students, which we don't have in the district, the highest is 99, then they get, or they historically have been getting a little over $400 per student. Every percentage point that you drop, the decrement has been $5.50. So off of that four something, it's like $438, $434. I'm sorry, I'm just not remembering it right now. Then $5.50 comes off for every percentage point that you have. So if you go from 99 and you're a school at 89, then that's 10 points. It would be $55 per student less, and so on and so forth. So that's the system that our board has decided is the most equitable to students in schools that have high needs, meaning a higher percentage of free and reduced lunch. So it's extremely important for schools to see what those percentages are. Now, the report that is in front of you is going to be a little different if you've been involved because there's no dollar amounts attached. And I want to explain to you why that's happening. Our district is shrinking. We have quite a few fewer students than we've had since the 15-5 was established. And with the onset of ESSA, the California Department of Education has not communicated to our district what our total allotment is for Title I yet, for next year. So we were a little hesitant to assume that we're going to get the same amount that we realistically have gotten over the years. So we decided we wanted to pass the percentages, and what I need for you to look at your school in just a moment, is what any change, if there's any change in the percentage. I'm going to highlight those changes right now, meaning schools that were not part of Title I, meaning they were under 40%, but this year they got over the 40%, and then the vice versa, those that were over 40%, but for next year, they would qualify under 40%. Those schools are new to Title I for next year. Tierra Santa Elementary, so they jumped over the 40% mark. Hage Elementary, De Portola Middle School, and a big one, University City High School. So they jumped over the 40%. They will be officially part of the Title I program next year. I'm sorry? Unless we change it. Those that are no longer officially for next year part of the Title I, meaning they drop below the 40%, I'm going to give you the bad news first, then I'll give you good news. The schools are Gage Elementary, they drop below 40, Erickson Elementary, Pacific Beach Middle School dropped below 40, San Diego High School, the Metropolitan Career and Tech campus, Henry High School dropped before the 40, below the 40, and iHigh Virtual Academy. Now that's the bad news. The good news is we built in a system of what we call grandfathering. So all of those six schools that I just named, they'll still receive Title I dollars next year even though they've dropped out, and they have a 1 year grace period to see what happens next year. So it's a transition year. So if you take that, there's four additional schools and we've had six schools fall out, but they'll still participate. That means the per dollars per student will probably go down a little bit. Hence, again, why we haven't put the numbers here. So what I'd like for you to do, and I'll do it on this because it's a little easier, these are the columns that you should be looking at. So if you'll read this, it's the schools are down here. Oh, you're going bigger. If you could slide it over. So let's just take Logan, for example. Logan's the first one. You don't have to go over. You really don't have to go. There you go. Their 2018 rank, meaning for this current school year, which was based on free and reduced lunch last year, was 97%. What they qualified this year for next year is 98%. So they went up one percentage point. It's not going to affect them super greatly. But there are some schools that swung a little differently the other way. And none of them are at the top. So what I'm going to do is if you will look at last year's ranking and this year's ranking, I'll give you 2 to 3 minutes for you to look up your school. Unfortunately, they're not alphabetical. They're actually by the percentage rank. So you're going to have to scan through that. Hence the reason I'm giving you 2 to 3 minutes to do that. So take that time, go ahead and look at your school, and then I'll answer any questions at the end. One thing I forgot to mention, the first couple pages are elementary, middle and high school are at the very end. It's separated by level. So I'm going to let the time go, but I will take that question first, and I'll address it, just what my thoughts are on that, okay? Just take another minute or two, and then we'll look at some questions. Is there anybody that needs more time to find your school? And then I'm going to answer Valentina's and any other question. Okay, the question that Valentina asked is, what happened with schools that went down? There's a number of things that could have happened. We, for lack of a better term, try and harass schools and communities to get in either their free and reduced lunch applications or the LCFF forms. Those are two ways to designate, through the actual applications or the LCFF forms. So I will just tell you, and I don't think she'd mind me saying this, but the principal at Patrick Henry, I told you, went down below the 40%. When she and I spoke about a week before the deadline, she was concerned. She said, what happens if I don't make it? Because I don't think I'm going to make it. And so I started to throw out, well, you know, send a letter home again. Do another call out. She said, Tom, if I do that, my community is going to get so mad. I feel like I'm harassing them, right? And so, actually, we have somebody in our office whose student goes to that school, and I think they accredited it. Yeah, she's kind of harassing people to get this in. So the principal of the school did everything that they can, but people were a little reluctant to turn in the forms. I don't know if it's the climate in our city, state, nation. I don't know if that had something to do with it. Also, what was mentioned was the ability to live in San Diego with rents and everything going up, people that are qualifying are moving out to other either parts of the city or the state or nation or even out of the country. I mean, where we are now, we have people that are moving back to Mexico and living there. So there's a lot of things that could have happened, and I'd love to have the exact answer. I don't, but those are some of the reasons why we've seen changes in some schools. Yet we've seen some schools that have gone up. So, you know, go figure. Yes.
Hi, Tom. Donald Thomas, Patrick Henry High. We had our SSC meeting today, and one of the takeaways we got addressing this common concern about the kids reluctant to fill out was that they changed the form from last year, and one of the things we got back from them that was pretty intrusive.
The form was pretty intrusive.
Form itself.
So I'd love to talk to Listy or whomever about that, because that's certainly not the intent. Matter of fact, we're looking at maybe going in online forms in the future because there might be ability to do that. There were, just like you did feedback for the LCAP, you can be doing it on your phone. Maybe we get a better return rate. But yeah, I'd love to have that offline conversation about how that is, because that certainly wasn't the intent. Was there another question over here that somebody was going to ask? Yes.
Sarah Pleasant Morris. My question is about the iHigh.
Virtual High.
Virtual Academy. Yeah. Because we have students in our cluster, or well, in our school specifically, that are dually enrolled.
Right.
So how do, like, where do they fit? Do they fit under their home high school or iHigh or both?
So every school has a CDE code. It's a code that the state gives you. So students that are enrolled, no matter where they're actually sitting on a campus, it's where their enrollment are. So they might be sitting on your campus, but they're really enrolled at iHigh Virtual Academy. So that would be the count here. So they may have turned the form in at Morse. They may have, you know, they're taking classes there, but it really counts towards iHigh. So that's a really good question, because you would think, well, if they're turning in at Morse, Morse is getting the credit, but they're actually coded on where the student's enrolled. So it's pretty accurate.
Even if the students are dually enrolled?
I think it's where a majority of their time is. Yes. Okay. Okay, so next month, we will have hoped to have heard from the CDE of what our allotment is. And what's really nice about this is you're seeing this tonight. At our next month meeting, you'll see it with dollars attached. Between then, the Board of Education will see a first read, but we're actually taking it to the Board of Education twice, so that if this or any other advisory body wants to make some sort of comment or concern, they can have the opportunity to do that. So next month, you'll see me again. probably cleanly shaven because it's November, what's that November challenge? No Shave November. And I'm so embarrassed because this is all I got, right? And these guys up here got full beards. You're making me feel really bad because I'm just so weak here. Anyway, I'll be back next month doing the dollars with you because it will go to the board. You'll have another opportunity to discuss that, okay? Thank you, Susan. Should I just go into the next one? Okay, I'm going to do this even quicker, I promise. Great questions, by the way. So I wanted to do this in this order. I made this request because now we're talking about the allocations or what the allocations will come from. This past year, for the or last year, we had some carry over money in Title I, and we put it to schools for professional development type things, PLCs, if you've heard that term, professional learning communities.
Yes.
And with that additional dollars, what you're going to see on here, and I'm going to ask you to look your school up in just a moment, these were dollars that were, for lack of a better term, left on the table from Title I. Now, there's no carryover, meaning if school A has $2,000 left over, they don't get that $2,000 next year. It goes into a central pool. And that central pool is how we fund various programs, or we generate the supplemental dollars which your school may have and goes out. But this is what the list is of what was left on the table last year. Now, there's two different categories on this report. The first one is 30100. That is the base allocation which comes from the ranking report that I just shared with you, that decrement system. We then take all of the Title I money that we get, and 1% has to go to each school for parent involvement policies. So the 1% so let's say a school gets $100,000 Title I, then they should get 1% dedicated only for parent involvement. Now, the first thing you're going to do is look at Kimbrough. Sorry that Kimbrough is always the model, but they're at the top. And you're going to say to me, well, $3,100 was $163,000, so 1% of that doesn't equal $2,200. These numbers won't jive with the basic allocations, and I'll tell you why. When a school has a spending deadline, normally in April-ish, and they want to buy something, that charge doesn't go out of their budget until the services are actually received. So what we have to do as a district is we need to, what we call, accrue those dollars. So they're set aside, knowing that that bill's coming after June 30th. Those dollars are included in this. So it's a little unfair, and I debated on which number to provide for you, to be real honest. I thought, well, let's just put the allocation in. But talking amongst all of the accountants and the people in our office, they said, well, then what are you going to do, Tom, when one of those accrues hits? Then you're going to show an overspending on Title I, and that's not the case. So it's kind of like we can dig into your school site to say exactly what happened. But my main goal is for you to look at the far right-hand corner, or far right-hand column, where it says percent of budget. Many of the schools, I'm just going to be upfront and honest, left 50% or more of their parent involvement money on the table. That doesn't mean they didn't have parent involvement. It means that they used other dollars to address those things. Because we were a little flush with Title I dollars last year. We put them out for the PLCs. This year there's a supplemental grant. And so I want you to understand that even though those percentages are high, it doesn't mean that parent involvement wasn't happening. We need to do a better job of spending it correctly, but that's what those numbers mean. When you look at the 3100 column, I flagged only a few schools that left over 20%. Now, every school, in most cases, is going to leave some money, and I'll tell you why. Valentina will attest to this because she was a parent at a school of mine for many years, and we had some carryover or some money that was left over. Because if we hire staff, let's say I hire two counselors and three teachers with Title I money, then I have to pay for when they're sick. Well, from the spending deadlines in April until the end of the school year, and Clark, where I was principal, is a year-round school, I had no idea if those people were going to be out 2 days a week or if they're going to be out 15 days a week, but I had to have enough money, or a week, 15 days till the end of the school year. I had enough money to cover it in case that happened. So you try and do your best, and I don't want to hold any principal up and say, man, you didn't do a good job because there was a couple of percentage points there where they didn't spend. It's really hard to get exactly accurate. But when you start getting into the 20%, then we need to start looking at, okay, did we spend that money strategically? Was there a better way to do this? And even more so, we need to look at, over time, are there certain schools? Now, I just want to give you my word that as we analyze that, If there's a certain school that over 3 years leaving 30-40% on the table, we start having conversations about how to reallocate those dollars. So with all of that said, go ahead and take, and I know you've probably been looking as I've been talking, which is what any smart person would do, but I'll give you just another second to look up your school and see if there's any other questions. Sorry, the budget is what, the budget column, is it, no. The budget column is what was allocated plus any accruals that I talked about. The expense is what they spent. So yes, the far right hand, or the grand total is what they left on the table. Exactly. Yes.
Excuse me, Susie, we've gone over time. That agenda, I'm sorry.
That's
and
fine.
I just find you so interesting, and I wish they would put you further up on the agenda. I think this is why we're here, is to hear about our Title I money and where it goes. And I think it belongs at the top of the agenda and not at the bottom. You can bring in the other speakers and things and have them come at the bottom. But you know, we're all awake at the beginning. Thank you.
So we're about 10 minutes over? Yeah. I'm trying to go as fast as I can. So. You know what, let's leave the report in your hands, and we can always, because nothing's going to change between the, now and next month. As far as these numbers, we can talk about those things when we get back next month. Thank you for your attention. Appreciate it.
Yes, I'm sorry. Normally we would move to extend the meeting, and I just missed it tonight. Apologies. Take this back to your school site. Keep the conversations around your spending going. If you left a lot of parent involvement stuff on the table, go check out the resources. There's different ways to spend it on the DAC website. Thank you for being here. The buses are here. They're ready.